Throughout history, freethinkers have outraged the religious with their wacky ideas about the virtues of free speech, reason, and of course, eating babies. Now, God is dying, and it's time to dispose of his remains. From the pits of hell, Satan sends two puppets of the imperialist West and the Zionist Jews against God, Islam, and tiny kittens to bring you their propaganda and conspire for a new world order. This is Secular Jihadists for a Muslim Enlightenment with Ali Rizvi and Armin Navabi.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Secular Jihadists for a Muslim Enlightenment. My name is Ali Rizvi, and I have two people to introduce you to today. Well, not introduce you to. You guys know them. Armin Navabi is with me, as always. Hey, Armin, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. And Susanna's here. Susanna's joining us for this episode.
Hello.
Okay, and I'm going to tell you why, because Susanna actually just this topic that we're talking about, which is a very unfortunate topic, and I'll introduce that in a bit. You know, Susanna has been looking into it a lot. She actually has a YouTube video up about it. So we thought that, you know, her thoughts were actually quite valuable for this episode. We're going to be bringing that. I'll be handing it to you, Susanna, to start. But just a quick introduction for people who don't know. We're talking today about Priyanta Kumara. Priyanta Kumara was a Sri Lankan man. He was living in Pakistan. He was working in Pakistan, right? I think he was of a Christian background. Right? So he's not a Muslim. He removed a wall poster from a building that had Islamic content on it. And that building was about to be renovated. And apparently that's why he removed it. In response, hundreds of Pakistanis, pretty much all men, from Tehreek-e-Labbaik, which is the group that we talked about recently with Shant Asir, which is now not banned in Pakistan, they beat him. They tortured him. They filmed the whole thing, then they set him on fire, and some of them took selfies with his sort of burning corpse. And they put it up online. They were obviously very proud of it, as they usually are in Pakistan when they do things like this. So now the question is, you know, there are a lot of people who are criticizing it, but unfortunately, I think that that's still a minority of people. So We're gonna talk about that here, and we're gonna talk about some of the larger issues surrounding it. We visited this topic here before, as many of you know. But Susanna, I'm gonna hand it over to you.
Well, it's interesting because there's varying reports about what happened. So some reports say that it was a poster with Islamic scripture, and then other reports say that it was a poster that was actually supporting the TLP. And that he was cleaning up the factory and took it down because there was a foreign audit that was going to happen. And if there's a foreign audit that's happening, you can't have posters supporting specific political parties. And so maybe it was a poster for the TLP that happened to have scripture or the name of the prophet on it. That's very possible. And then other reports are saying that this is all a cover up for other contentions that the workers had with him as the manager of this factory, where he had apparently worked for about 7 years. And it's shocking. It's an incident where you struggle to even conceive of words to describe what you are seeing. But what stands out to me are a few things. One, I was surprised to actually see the shock that was expressed on Pakistani social media, because if you follow Pakistan, you know that there is constant persecution of people for blasphemy in the country. I was interested to see that Imran Khan had some very strong statements to make about it on Twitter. Yet he says nothing when this actually happens to his own citizens. That really stood out to me. And we can talk about why we think that is in a second. But I was confused by the shock. Honestly, Ali, I was confused by the shock. Why are people shocked? Why? This This happens throughout the country consistently. Are they shocked because it happened to a foreign national? This happens to your neighbors. The religious minorities of the country consistently, systematically even.
It happened to Michelle Khan. Michelle Khan, the student at the University of Peshawar.
Yeah. Same lynched thing. By his own fellow university students on campus in the middle of the day. So there seemed to be I was witnessing a disconnect from a population. Why are they? What's the surprise? I'm not surprised entirely. I'm shocked by the barbarity of it. But am I surprised that something like this happened in Pakistan? Of course not. I don't know if maybe that's something you can speak to. Like, is there just denialism?
I think it's, and you know, no analogy is perfect, but it reminds me the reaction to it a lot of times reminds me of, you know, how you have school shootings in the US. Every time this happens, people come out and say, oh, this is senseless. This is evil. How can anybody do this? But it happens over and over again, and they get shocked. And people, at least, you know, at least they feign shock, right? And I think every time we dismiss something as just, oh, this is senseless, this is evil, this is beyond comprehension, you give up the opportunity to learn from it because you're dismissing it. You're, you know, by dismissing it as one of those things, you're not facing up to it and trying to figure out what happened, right? And I actually want to read a quick quote from Aldous Huxley, you know, who wrote Brave New World. And this, I mean, this applies to a lot of things, and you'll probably think of a lot of things when you hear this, but it especially applies to situations like this. So he said, quote, "The surest way to work up a crusade in favor of some good cause is to promise people they will have a chance of maltreating somebody. To be able to destroy with good conscience, to be able to behave badly and call your bad behavior righteous indignation, this is the height of psychological luxury, the most delicious of moral treats." And that's it. Because I think that one thing that Aldous Huxley did in a lot of his writing was he was very upfront about how he used to deal with the sort of the dark realities of just the human mind very, very closely, very honestly. And that's something I think we really miss the opportunity. Like you're absolutely right. Like when we are shocked about something like this, we sort of decide that we're not going to try to understand it. Like this is so shocking and so beyond comprehension.
I really think you guys should start by saying, but did you guys watch the video? Because I think you're assuming, we haven't even told in detail what happened. I think it's fair to tell people what happened.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
Like in a bit more, like if you watch the video, can you guys describe? Because I think it's important for people to know the level of, you know, this. I don't even know how to describe it. So if you guys want to just get and do that.
So, well, Ali gave the brief synopsis at the beginning. So I've seen videos of him being pulled in every which direction by just mobs of men. There were videos of him being pushed around in what kind of looked like a rooftop. I'm not sure where they were, but he almost looked like in a daze.
Well, I think, okay, so you guys, I don't think, because people haven't seen, like, I think you're assuming that people know that he's in a crowd and he's surrounded by people. Like people don't know that. Like the situation is that he's being pulled out of the building. I don't recommend that anybody goes watches the videos if they can't handle this. But you have this foreign national and a whole bunch of Pakistanis are surrounding him. And before this, we have people asking the manager of that place to bring him out because they want to punish him. And he says, like, we will, the manager or is telling people to please go home. They will get somebody to come arrest them. Like they will file charges against them. So please, like, get the mob to settle down, right? And the mob is like, no, we don't trust the government. Even if he gets, like, because of, they have seen that everybody gets on death row because of these blasphemy laws. They don't get executed. So the mob is like, he's just going to go free. He's going to get out. He's not going to get the punishment. So the mob is like, they want to handle this themselves, right? And the manager of this place is just trying to tell them, like, dude, you know, we're going to file a report against him. What he did is horrible. Like, he's, you know, he's trying to appease them by saying that he agrees with them that this was horrible, but we're going to get the officials to come respond to this. And the mob is just not having it, right? The mob is just like, we're going to do this ourselves, right? At first, it seemed like they were suggesting, like, they were okay with, like, it kept getting more and more aggressive. Eventually, I don't know how they managed to eventually get him pulled out into the mob. But yeah, so now that, so go on, Susanna, because I just think people might have not known that this is one person and a sea of like Pakistani people around one foreign national, and they are
hundreds of them.
Yeah. Hundreds of them. And he's just, it's a slow, I don't know exactly how he died, but it's very, very, and you have, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the manager who was trying to appease the crowd is on top of him trying to protect him from the beatings.
That's right, at one point.
And he's getting hit himself while trying to use his body as a shield, right? Is that correct?
He was the only person who tried to protect him.
Right.
Yeah, like he was using his own body to try to shield this worker while and hundreds of people are trying to attack him, right? So go on. Sorry, I interrupted you, but go on.
No, that was all good. Because I wasn't sure about like what level of specificity you were looking for. I mean, it's just horrible. It's a man being beaten to death. He looks so disoriented in the videos that I've seen, like almost like he was semi-conscious at that point. And then other videos I've seen are like a view from above, and you just see huge circles of people, and you just see his body on the ground, and men are taking turns stomping him with all their might in every part, his head, his torso, his ribs, his legs. And you just see his limbs, you know, limply jiggling around in reaction to the force coming down on his skeleton. And you see these men holding up their cell phones to film the whole thing. And they're all taking turns beating him with their hands, kicking him. And there's, besides those moments where this man whose last name is, I think his name is
Malik Adnan.
Malik.
Yeah, and Malik Adnan was the man who protected him, and he actually got an award from the government. And we'll talk about that in a bit too.
But. Yeah, but besides those. So
while you're speaking, is the picture you see, is that his? Can I put that up
for people to see? The victim, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Continue. He's just being killed and beaten slowly. I can only hope he lost consciousness very early on. And at some point, they pour kerosene on his body, his corpse, and just light it on fire in what looks to be just the middle of the street. And they're cheering and taking selfies in front of this burning body. And there seems to be a spirit of victory, of joy, of success, of righteousness in what they've done together as a group to this defenseless man, taking it upon themselves to defend their prophet. And it's one of the most disturbing things I've ever seen.
That's actually one thing that was made you feel so like empty inside, because of not just the beating, not just the abuse, but how proud the crowd seemed to have been. Like the selfies that they were taking, the feeling of how virtuous of an act this was, the feeling of the heroism, the fact that they felt like this was their chance of doing something honorable. Like they took advantage of this chance, and this was the highlight of their life. And they made sure that they were recording it and so proud of it, and made sure, like, it was amazing how joyful they were for them to be have been have given this opportunity, like, and that they didn't miss it. And you know, the selfies were amazing. That the fact, like, they wanted to make sure that they record that they were here for this moment, and they were
to
and
take
they took
credit
part.
For being a defender. Yeah, and it,
yeah,
Islam,
and even
a defender of their prophet.
Yeah, and even like people who wanted to make sure that they didn't miss out, like when he was dead, they were like, "Oh no!" Like, they didn't do anything, and they were like going on top of his dead body and stomping it, even though he was dead, because they were like, "No, like not like they didn't want to make sure that they did also something, that they were also there, that they were also part of the abuse, like they, you know." Because it was because there was too many of them, and it was just one guy, and it seemed like, oh no, don't kill him too soon. I need to be part of this. I need to also be part responsible for defending Muhammad. So much so that they were so desperate for so long after his death to also keep people lining up to make sure that they were part of this great moment. Like, I don't know how a country could get to this point. You know what I mean? And I think, like, the only answer to that is Islam. Right? Mm-hmm. But Ellie, you go ahead. What do you think?
I think you're right when you say the country. Because the problem for me this time is that you have the apologists talking about how this is just a minority. Most of us are outraged. And it's the opposite. It's the opposite. Like, there's a... Yeah, you know, when people see this guy getting lynched, a lot of people feel really bad about it. But if you don't tell them about that, and if you tell them that this was a blasphemy thing, he was beaten to death, and they just hear about it, unfortunately, you know, most of them, I'm willing to bet, don't have a problem with it. They're willing to overlook the issue. The defense minister himself, when they tried to blame the government, the defense minister said that, hey, you know, when young people get older, they have emotions and they do dumb things. This is just like a dumb mistake that some young people, young boys did because they were just so full of passion. You know, that's what the defense minister, and this is the defense minister of the country. I mean, a country is, unfortunately, it is the people who are elected, or the people that are running a country, usually just representative of the people that are in the country. There is a mindset there. And so I'll tell you something, and I was going to wait for you guys to finish and then tell you this, that I watched a few short clips of the video with Malik Adnan in it, Susanna, who was trying to protect him, and I didn't watch the rest of it. I didn't watch it because I've been on these sort of Pakistani WhatsApp groups, And they send each other, like, they send these videos that the people who are shocked about them, they send these really graphic videos, and they tell you, you really need to see this, because if you don't see this, you're not going to understand how gruesome the situation is. I remember watching this video of a bunch of, like, Pashtun people, they'd beheaded some guys, and they were playing soccer with their heads. Okay? Yeah. There was a video of this, and I was watching it. I remember I just woken up. I was looking at my phone, and someone had sent me this video. That, look at this. This is so outrageous, and it's almost like there's that question that, do you keep on watching these things just because you want to register the reality of how gruesome this stuff is, or do you allow it, or do you keep watching it and allow it to desensitize you? I'm not shocked about what happened either, Susanna. I'm not, but in fact, I think it's good for people to not be shocked and to realize the problem, that this is not shocking anymore. But at the same time, I don't want to be desensitized to images like that, because that's what happens. Even if you see them and you don't like them and they disturb you every time you do it, there's an element of desensitization. And I think this is the country. When you say it's a country, just look at the funeral of Mumtaz Qadri. For me, that was a turning point. I think when, you know, people said, do you still have hope for the country of your birth?
Can you explain who that is for people who don't know?
Yeah. So Mumtaz Qadri, he was a bodyguard of the governor of Punjab's largest province.
Short version, so we could get back to this story.
Yeah. Yeah, so the Punjab's largest province, whose name is Salman Taseer. Salman Taseer, many of you who've been listening to us, you know that his son, Shan Taseer, usually, like, he's been on the podcast several times. Salman Taseer, so yeah, he was the governor, and he there was a woman who was on trial for blasphemy. Her name was Asiya Bibi. She's a Christian woman accused of blasphemy, alleged blasphemy, and a mob had wanted to, like, it was the same thing. They wanted to kill her. And she was in jail, and Salman Taseer went and showed solidarity with her. He went and he sat with us. He did a photo opportunity. He told everybody that, you know, we shouldn't do this. And he stood
really,
by somebody.
A really shorter story, because we want to focus on this story.
Yeah, we will. And then, so what happened was that his bodyguard shot him. His own bodyguard, who was a very religious guy. And he thought that because he was standing with this woman who was accused of blasphemy, that he's one himself. He did that. And hundreds of lawyers volunteered to represent Mumtaz Qadri. He was treated as a hero. There were shrines built to him, right? He was just decorated, celebrated, and eventually he was sentenced to death by the government for killing a governor, and the funeral had crowds that you couldn't see the end of. Just go and Google and do a Google image search of Mumtaz Qadri funeral, and you'll see that this is the killer's funeral, not the governor's funeral, the killer's funeral. Anyway,
I do want to mention that a lot of people might want to say, like, it's not Islam, even, you know, necessarily that causes situations like this, right? And some people might want to point to the bad economic conditions, lack of opportunity for people to grow, lack of hope for future, and, you know, colonialism, influence of foreign actors, right? And to that, I want to say that there are many, many countries that are doing worse than Pakistan, right? There are many countries in Africa that economically they're worse off than Pakistan. And you don't see stuff like this happening over there, right? You don't see, you know, countries that have been affected by, I don't know, world powers, right? We have Vietnam. We have Cambodia. Cambodia was devastated by super United States. We have many examples, right? But I'm not saying these things are not a factor. Obviously, they're part of the factor. But the Islam factor needs to be there for you to get something, a hell like this. Like, the key factor is Islam. You don't see this in other poor countries without Islam. You don't see this in other victims of imperialism or, like, superpowers. You don't see other countries behave in such a way. You don't see people from Cambodia do stuff like this, even though their country was, like, almost destroyed by the United States, right? So it's not, you know, if you keep seeing the common denominator is always going to be Islam. I wouldn't even say religion. It's Islam. Right. I mean, I am against religion. I'm against all superstition. I'm against all faith. But when it comes to having this kind of effect on people, there's no religion that even comes close. Like, we could, like, scripturally, we look at all religions and they're all insane, and they're all wrong. And some of them could even be more violent. Like, there are verses I was just looking in the Gita, there are some verses that is even more violent than the Quran. But when it comes to the effect on people, Islam is just, like, yeah. And again, Pakistan is a great example of that, because of the vacuum that Islam as a culture grows in. Like, in other Islamic countries, there are competing cultures, there are competing ideas, there are competing ways of life, there are competing philosophies, there are competing ethical philosophies. In almost every Islamic countries, even in Saudi Arabia, like, in the most two famous theocracies that you look at, when it comes to Iran obviously has many competitors to Islamic values within Iran, but even in Saudi Arabia, you know, there's a major competition against Wahhabi ideas, right? You know, demand for modernization, and even the evil people in power, which is the House of Saud, they're mostly motivated by, I don't know, capital and money more than Islam, right? So there are competing interests, again, you know, not just Islam, but no country other than Pakistan, you see that the culture, the history, the ideals, the goal that is Islam, right? Like there are like people who have other values, but not like the competition is very weak compared to other countries. And this is the result of an entire country's identity being based on Islam. It's what you get. What you get is Pakistan.
Yeah. And that's something that I think a lot of people are thinking about now. And some of us have been thinking about that for a very long time. And Islam is you can't actually remove Islam from Pakistan's idea, because Pakistan is a group of different ethnicities that have been thrown together, right, in this pot that they don't want to mix, right? You've got the Pashtuns up in the northwest, you've got the Punjabis in Punjab, the largest province, you've got Sindhis south towards the coast where Karachi is, and you've got the Balochis. And Balochis, we know, have a very active separatist movement right now. None of these ethnicities, nobody really likes each other. They all speak completely different languages. They're all culturally extremely disparate and very, very different. One of the things that Muhammad Ali Jinnah, who was a founder of Pakistan, wanted to do, like he knew that Islam, the religion, was really going to be the only glue that's going to hold all of them together. And it's very fragile, right? But it's the only way to keep the country together. And if they give up on Islam, you're going to have a country in disarray. Right? That's just how it's going to take place. And surprisingly for most people today who don't know, Muhammad Ali Jinnah, the founder of Pakistan, was an Ismaili Muslim. And then later he became Ithnashi. I think he had some personal issues with the Aga Khan. But I don't know what's exactly the story is. But he was an Ismaili Muslim who wouldn't even be considered a real Muslim in Pakistan today. He was married to a Zoroastrian, a Parsi woman, right? And that's not even a legal union in Islam, because you can only marry, if you're a man, you can only marry Christians and Jews. So this is like the entire thing is, it's just extremely confused, and people themselves don't know about it. They don't know about it. And the religious fervor just makes them, I mean, it just takes the misinformation, the fact that they're ignorant, it takes that and makes them proud of it. It makes them actually just celebrate their own ignorance and stupidity.
I mean, it's to the point where, I mean, Ali, you'd be very familiar with this. I have many Pakistani friends that when they leave Islam, people in their community ask them, are you not Pakistani anymore? Mm-hmm. Like the idea of separating the two is incomprehensible to many people around them. Like you can't be Pakistani and not follow Islam. Yeah. It's so, oh my gosh.
I mean, you can, you just to be clear, that's what they think.
Yes. But you can, yes. Obviously. That's their attitude, I do wanna, not mine.
You're right. If you didn't want to add anything, Bulbul has two very good questions
I
want to highlight. Yeah. Do you want to read this?
Yeah. Bulbul is asking, people complain that such lynchings happen because the Pakistani government doesn't implement the blasphemy law properly, and people don't trust the government anymore. Thoughts? I think it's a really vicious feedback cycle. So the government can't enforce the blasphemy law because they are aware of how this would look on the international stage. They don't have the will, in my opinion, to actually follow through with it. So they either pardon people or help people escape in the dead of night, and then they have to leave the country altogether because the mob will take it into their own hands.
This might be a curse of knowledge situation. Before you continue, for people who don't know, officially in Pakistan, blasphemy is punishable by death. But so far, even though people are on death row for blasphemy in Pakistan, the state itself has never executed anybody for blasphemy. Even though officially that's what they're supposed to do, the people who keep dying for blasphemy is because of the mob, not because of the government. In fact, if you get arrested for blasphemy, that's probably a good thing, because you're safer in prison than outside of a prison. And the government doesn't want to punish anybody for blasphemy by death sentence. They want to just keep them in prison, because internationally the cost for that is going to be high, which also shows that you, as people who share content, are part of the equation for this to be a heavy cause for Pakistan. Like, don't let people tell you that, oh, you're just a Twitter activist, this has no influence. The fact that it's the Pakistan pays a heavy international political cost for executing anybody is probably is because people actually pay somewhat some attention, right? So you as a viewer are part of the equation by sharing the content that matters, that needs more eyeballs. Okay, so don't just be a consumer of this content, be part of sharing it or telling people and caring about it, right? So I just wanted to give the context. Sorry, Susan, I interrupted.
No, thank you, Armin. You're right, I wasn't explaining. So like I was saying, so there is an unwillingness to enforce it, but at the same time, the government validates and legitimizes it because of their need to galvanize, to pander, et cetera, to create nationalizing nationalism. And so then people feel empowered and righteous in taking it into their own hands. And I think it all around creates this toxic circle that can't be escaped. What do you guys think about this?
One way that the government legitimizes it is by saying officially the punishment should be the death sentence, and they are right. And then when they don't carry out the death sentence, the people are like, well, the government itself is accepting that this is the just punishment for blasphemy. So we are morally in the right, according to Islam, and the government is admitting that. So the fact that the government doesn't execute people, this is the government failing at providing justice. That's why we have to come in place, because the government is not doing a job. But even if the government is not executing anybody, by officially recognizing that the punishment should be the death penalty, they're giving, you know, ammunition to people that thinking like, we're just enforcing the laws of the land that the government is not following through. But I don't know if I don't know how to respond to Bulbul's. Bulbul, you're saying that the criticism doesn't make any sense, because you're saying people complain that such lynchings happen because the Pakistani government doesn't implement the blasphemy law. But you're saying that the government, well, the people who complain about this are saying that the government should kill people for blasphemy so that the mob doesn't kill people for blasphemy. Like, I don't think that makes any sense, especially given that the number of people would have increased who were killed by blasphemy, because for every person that is on death row and doesn't get killed, like a fraction of that actually ends up getting killed by the mob. So if the government wanted to stop the mob killings by actually executing the blasphemy laws, then the numbers of people killed for blasphemy would increase, not decrease. So I don't see how that could be a complaint.
Essentially what we're saying is, okay, we can't trust the government to kill these people, so we have to kill them ourselves. I mean, either way, they're killing them. You know, there's
that's not what Bulbul is asking. Bulbul is asking that, I mean, I don't think this is Bulbul's complaint. Bulbul is just telling other people's complaint. Bulbul is saying that some people say, like, shouldn't the government execute blasphemers so that the mob doesn't take the justice into their hand? I just think, like, well, that will increase death for blasphemy, not decrease it. So I don't know how's that an improvement. Maybe you could say it's an improvement because, I don't know, it's more brutal the way mob kills it, but I don't think that's the solution to stopping the mob, is to do something so cruel and inhuman. Not how you appease, that's not how you stop it, but go on.
You have to remember one thing, that this mob is more powerful than the government. The government is scared of this mob. So I'll tell you, no matter what government's been out there, and like a lot of these governments have not been super, super religious. I mean, if you apply for a Pakistani identification card or a Pakistani passport, right, you have to sign a disclaimer at the bottom that if you're writing that your religion is Muslim on the application form, there's a disclaimer that says, I believe, and you have to sign this. Like, I believe that Mirza Ghulam Ahmed, who's the founder of the Ahmadi movement, I believe he was an imposter. He has nothing to do with Islam. You know, he's not a Muslim, and everybody, all of his followers are not Muslim. So you have to essentially sign that. And without that, you can't get your passport. So either you have to put your religion as separate from Islam if you don't want to sign it, but if you're going to put yourself as a Muslim, you have to sign that. And this is something that's been around for ages. Okay. It's been around since the 70s. And none of these governments have been able to change it, because if they change it, there's going to be an uprising that you like you won't believe. That mob is going to come to life, and they know it, so they won't do it.
One thing else about this mob that would be relevant to Bobo's question, if you want to finish answering Bobo and then go to her second question, is that another thing that is wrong about this complaint that people like, oh, if the government just executed, carried out the blasphemy law, these people would have been happy and wouldn't do this. These people will never be satisfied, right? Like, the Islamists that are taking the power into their own hand in Pakistan, if you give in to them, I mean, if you don't give in to them, they will be motivated to raise hell. But if you also give in to them, they will want 10 times more after that. They will see that as a victory and a signal to now demand for more. So if you like, if the idea is like, okay, the Pakistan, first of all, we have seen the Pakistan civilian government, every time they bend the knee to these people because they're scared, they don't go home. They're like, oh, mission accomplished. So like, look at our power. What else can we get? Right? So let's say, for example, people like say like the government carries out and executes blasphemers so that the lynchings don't happen. Do you think these people are going to be just like, okay, we're satisfied now? There's no way. That would be a major signal boost to them to come out even harder and demand more and become even more. Like, you're showing to them that these violent ways gets results, and they will be more motivated to use the same tactics. The only solution is for the army to stop using them. And just come in. Like, I think the only solution is for this will never happen, by the way, because the army itself is filled with sympathizers of these people. But the only solution would have been for the army to stop using these people against the civilian government, and just, you know, hopefully one day the army will see them as a threat, not these groups as a threat just to the civilian government. If maybe the army all of a sudden sees it as a threat to themselves, but again, that's not going to happen because the army sympathizes with them too much. Also, Bobo is clarifying, saying, yeah, that's actually what they're saying, that you need evidence and judgment in a court of law to kill blasphemers. But again, that's amazing that we're talking about like, oh, why are you killing blasphemers without evidence? You need to kill blasphemers with evidence. That's where we are at right now. So,
Susanna, and not to mention people get killed while in the courtroom for their trial.
Oh, yeah. Remember that?
For blasphemy, yeah. Just last year. Bulbul's second question is, how sincere do you think Imran Khan's comments about this incident are, given that his government is negotiating with the TLP? And I actually have his tweet right here. So on the day of the murder, December 3rd, he said, the horrific vigilante attack in Sialkot, is that how you say it, Ali?
Sialkot.
And the burning alive of a Sri Lankan manager is a day of shame for Pakistan. I'm overseeing the investigation, and let there be no mistake that all those responsible will be punished with full severity of the law. Arrests are in progress. I think he's full of shit.
Yeah.
He doesn't say anything when this happens to his own citizens. Nothing.
Yeah, because look, the thing is, I think a lot of these guys, Imran Khan personally, I think, I think that he thinks that this is a terrible thing that happened over here. There is a history of their relationship with Sri Lanka. So, you know, if you recall, several years ago, when Asif Zardari was president, he'd promised personal protection to the Sri Lankan cricket team that was visiting so they could play in Pakistan. This is a big thing for, you know, people to be able to come to Pakistan and visit, tourism, you know, the cricket teams coming and playing and everything. That's an economic benefit and a diplomatic benefit to Pakistan. And when he promised presidential security to the van, the Taliban were able to successfully attack it and cause a lot of damage. So this is Imran Khan's tweeting this out immediately because this is a Sri Lankan man. He knew that the Sri Lankan government's going to get involved. This had to do with a relationship, a diplomatic relationship. When it comes to his own people, he doesn't need to do it. Because,
you know, think about what that means, by the way, Ellie. Mm-hmm. And you know, that your government, right, is supposed to be your representative to provide safety and justice to your citizens, right? But it takes the killing of a Sri Lankan to for them to care. Like, that means that your own government does not care about your own people, does not care about Pakistanis. Pakistani citizens matter less when they're killed by mob for blasphemy. And also it shows that this is not about this individual. Like, no, they don't care about this person. It's not about the value of the individual. It's about international relationships. You know what I mean? So that's why, like, think about how inhumane this is, that Imran Khan cares about this individual more, not for the sake of the individual, because of the consequences of the international relationship. Like human lives are so worthless in these countries.
Yeah.
Also, I do want to highlight that what Susanna mentioned about how he's full of shit, because this is their doing. These people fit into this.
Get into it.
For the sake of getting elected. This is a monster that they have created knowingly, because of the short-term interest of how easy it was to give in to this crowd for some quick votes.
Yeah.
Power-hungry people, and they knew that this is the nature of the crowd. By the way, this is not the majority of Pakistan, but this is the most loudest active people that you could use to get some quick power, knowing how evil and how monstrous this is, but you kept feeding it because of your own personal gains out of it. And now people are paying the price while you get the benefit of it from being in power. And now you're acting like, oh, I'm against this. You created this. This is your own doing. These people's blood are on your hand, Imran Khan, you and the army, who keep using them against each other.
Yeah. I was born in Pakistan. I grew up there. It gave me a lot of things that I have. I mean, I didn't fully grow up there. But, you know, I went to university there. A lot of the career I have is because of things. And it was all sort of these minority groups. I mean, I went to a university that was founded by the Aga Khan's Ismaili project. And there's a lot of wonderful, like, this is the problem with me, and I struggle with this when I try to think about whether I'm going to be optimistic or not, is that, let me see how I can explain this, is that there's so many, a lot of my friends, there's a lot of love, a lot of great music, great food, everything. And then now I think, but if it disappeared off the face of the earth, would the world be better or worse? Right? And let's take apart all of my loved ones and everybody who are back there. Let's say we could safely
get them. Wait, no, Ali, be careful what you're saying here. What do you, like, please don't.
No. I'm not talking about existential. If it disappeared, like, if it didn't. No, right, like, now.
But be very careful, because people might, I know what you're saying, but people might take that the wrong way. So
yeah, let me just say it.
Let's not say disappeared. Let's say, if it never existed to begin with, at least let's be a little bit more careful with
the language. Well, I mean, considering what it is right now, the country, what it is right
yes,
now.
Yes, but if it wasn't there, if it wasn't,
we're not saying that we're gonna do to it what
I know, Ali. I'm not the one. Don't act like I'm being irrational here. The people who decide whether or not we're using problematic language or not are not the most rational actors here. So you have to be extra careful. Don't be like, oh, Armin, I know. I'm not the one who judges these
things. Yeah, but let me finish what I'm saying.
No, like, don't use disappear as a word. Like, use different phrasing.
Please. Okay, go on. Whatever. Anyway, so if the country...
Yeah, right, whatever. The entire channel is at stake. But be careful, okay, Ali, please.
If the country, the way that it exists right now, suddenly tomorrow didn't exist, let's say it that way, right? Would the world be better off or not? And if you do just that thought experiment, right now, as someone who grew up there and has a lot of emotional attachment to it as well, I just don't feel that it would. Like, I just don't think that there's much to it. There isn't much in terms of identity. There isn't much in terms of contribution to the world, whether it's the tangible contributions like economic contributions or any kind of trade or any product that they're making, or anything else, just any kind of idea or any sort of philosophy that holds them together, right? Which a lot of other places.
Ali, I know you don't mean anything bad about this, but I think this is irresponsible language to use, especially when we're talking about two countries next to each other with nuclear power. Okay, two countries with nuclear weapons side by side next to each other. Such suggestions, this kind of language, could be misinterpreted. I know you don't mean. Don't tell me you don't mean it, because I know you don't mean it. But I don't think this is a responsible way of talking about this issue.
No, I disagree. I think that most people here, they know exactly what I'm saying. Just like you know what understand what I'm saying. I think that they understand.
I just think like we should not even talk about potentially like what's the effects of countries disappearing. I just think that that's not a good way of thinking about it. I know Ali, you don't mean anything bad. Of course you don't mean anything bad, but I'm just like
I mean, I've made my point here. That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I just wanted to add that I don't think that's a good way of that. I know it's just a thought experiment. I just don't think it's a good thought experiment.
Yeah, given I'm just saying that's what this is not just me. I mean, this is what a lot of people who grew up there, who are attached to it, who have very personal
emotions. Yeah, we made that point. So let's just,
So,
Susanna, go ahead.
Yes, Susanna.
I have something that's been on my mind a lot today. The body of Priyantha arrived, it was delivered back to Sri Lanka recently. And I saw the photos of state officials receiving his coffin. It was a simple coffin covered in a white sheet and marigold garlands. And you know what I thought when I saw that? I thought, what is even in that box? There was nothing left of him. Besides black ash that was in the mound that generally resembles a human body. I saw a report that said that 99% of the bones in his body were shattered. 89% of it was completely burned. What was left to be returned to his family? And I made myself watch the videos of what happened to him. Because I was thinking about how no one in that crowd saw his humanity. And I was going to be damned if I wasn't going to be a witness to that man's humanity in the last hours of his life. And it's hard to look at the people in that crowd and see that most of them are under the age of 30. I want to have hope for Pakistan. I don't like thinking, I like to have empathy for all people. I don't like to go back to my audience and say, what is there worth preserving? But it's this question I struggle with. I want so dearly for there to be a better life for the Pakistani people. But how can that exist when the nation is rotted to the core like this? And when I was watching the videos of what happened to Priyantha, I was thinking about, you know, I try really, really hard to try to find something, for lack of a better word, worthwhile out of the darkest of human circumstances. And the reason why I think it's important for me personally to watch those videos, and why it's important for us around the world to talk about stuff like this is because it's only through talking about it and giving international outrage that he didn't die in vain. It has to serve as a wake-up call to the beating heart of Pakistan. Otherwise, he died for taking down a piece of paper. A provider, a loving father was taken away for a piece of paper. It's in the leaders in this country, they don't give a shit. They distract. They use this ideology because they have nothing to bring to their people as accomplishments to be proud of. And point to the West and say, this is where they point, they say, this is where the depravity is coming from. It's a level of sick absurdity that it's almost too much. And I feel so horrible for his wife and his children. And I am sickened by every person who doesn't condemn this in the strongest terms, of which in the elite there aren't any, because they can't, because they know what will happen to them and their family, because they saw what happened to Salman Taseer. I have no way to comprehend of how to move forward from this. To move forward, there would have to be will and enforcement. I don't think there's the will. Yeah, that's what I was really weighing on my mind today when I was preparing for this episode.
Yeah, I don't think there's the will. And that's a problem. I think it's in the culture. It's just become so toxic. And I think what you said, one of the things you just said right now about the government not being able to come back and show them any accomplishments that they're proud of, it's a vicious cycle, because they don't have any accomplishments that they can be proud of, and they don't have, so they hold back to this, you know, what they think of as a quote accomplishment, which is their religious fervor, which is nothing that they work to earn. And the more they involve themselves in this, lower the chances of them achieving any other accomplishments. It's a vicious cycle.
Even the religion isn't their own. It's not even their own. It's not their own language. It's not their own culture. It's a colonizing force.
Right.
These people have been stripped of any cultural identity and heritage. It's insane. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's much deeper. It isn't. That's the thing. Like, there's. Well, I know people get tired of using the word systemic, but this is what the systemic rot looks like.
One thing I want to I try to do to put this in context is that I, you know, when I lost my mom, it was devastating, right? It was a pain that I couldn't imagine. You know, most people, like, one of the, you know, worst times in my life, the worst time in my life. But I can't imagine how much worse that would be. Like, I'm trying to think of this man's wife and children, right? Like, the pain that I went through when I lost my mom I went through that knowing that she was surrounded by her family. We said our goodbyes to her. She was like in a comfortable bed, you know, her husband next to her, her children next to her, holding hand, kissing her face. And that was still very painful. But imagine the children knowing that their father went away and they didn't say his last moments was amount of confusion, fear, and pain that most people will never experience. And just wondering, like, you know, just growing up the rest of their lives knowing that this is how their father went and wishing like they could never got to say bye to him, wishing maybe they could see him one last time before he went through that. Like, I wonder, like, when he was, like, knowing that this is it, this is going to die, like, was he worried about what's going to how is his family going to survive? Like, was he worried about not being able to see, like, his wife, looking at his wife one more time before this is going to happen to him? Was he worried about the pain or about how much, like, was he thinking about how much his wife is going to be heartbroken knowing that this is going through, what he's going through? Like, would that, because that would be the pain. Like, if I was going through that, knowing that this is it, this is me dying, what would hurt me the most is like, oh my God, this is going to break my wife. This is going to break the people who love me. This is going to break my children. That's what I think it would go through. And I can't just imagine, like, and again, like Susanna said, over a piece of fucking paper. Mm-hmm. And by the way, fuck your prophet. Fuck Islam. Fuck Allah. And fuck Muhammad, you pieces of shit. Your religion deserves no respect. Anyways. Bulbul has another question. Do you guys want to end with that? Or Ali, do you want to
add anything? I'll read it out. I'll just read it out. Bulbul is saying, do you think the perpetrators who have been arrested will be adequately punished? If yes, do you think this will be a little bit of a deterrent? Yeah, this is a crazy answer, unfortunately. But yes, I think they will be adequately punished. But no, I don't think this will be a deterrent at all. You got to understand, like, I think, Armin, when you were talking about how human life just has no value, especially if they're own citizens, this is a place that glorifies martyrdom. Death is celebrated. When you think that you're going to a better place after you die, when you think that life continues after you die, earthly life diminishes in value by definition. If you celebrate martyrdom, that if you die in a certain way, you will go to a place that is a utopia. Human life on earth, by definition, it's just the value of it just decreases in the minds of these people. We're not talking about reality. We're talking about in the minds of these people. So what happens is if they think that when these people who are punished, supposing that they are executed like Mumtaz Qadri was, they're going to be martyrs. They're going to be looked at as martyrs. So it's not just going to be a deterrent. It's going to be the opposite. More people are going to be motivated to do this because when their funerals happen, there are going to be crowds there. The Tehrik-e-Lebek people will show up in abundance. Entire fields, sports stadiums are going to be filled. Like sports stadium-sized crowds are going to be there celebrating the lives of these people when they're these murderers. And when that happens, a lot of kids in those crowds are going to want to be celebrated that way. So it's going to be exactly the opposite of the deterrent, and it's going to be that way because they're going to be punished. There's no winning it.
Basically, to put it in another way, what Ali just said, you know how I said that these people, a lot of them were motivated to be able to take part in a righteous act, right? This righteous act would be infinitely more righteous if they die for it. Like imagine like them being so eager to being able to attack somebody who insulted Muhammad, because why would they be so motivated? These are the people who think this is something that Allah would look favorably upon, right? So the same people with that mindset, if they die doing that, there's nothing more honorable for than that, dying on the path of protecting the honor of Muhammad. Like, there is no greater glory. So this, for at least some of them, this would be a reward. Whatever, I mean, even if the cost is lower, whatever, the more the cost they have to pay for defending the honor of Muhammad, the greater the act is going to become. Yeah, so there's that. Anyways, we hit the 1 hour mark. So we should end this here. Do you guys wanted to say anything else before we end the stream?
I'm not sorry for crying, because this is worth crying over.
Okay. Yeah, why would you be sorry? You should never be sorry for crying. Yeah, this is, it's, you know, I wish more people felt the way that you do on this. And, you know, I'll tell you, like, there's gonna be a lot of idiots be like, okay, well, why are you? You're not even Pakistani. And the thing, and the problem is, like, there's no Pakistan. If Pakistanis reacted to this the way that you did, this is the state that we're in, that, you know, people who are, and people like you are reacting to something that, you know, they are just completely desensitized to, when it's something that's happening in their own country. I mean, it's just, I think that that says a lot in itself. Yeah, I don't know what else to say. I just don't know if there's a, I don't know what the solution to this is.
Well, one thing you could do if you're listening is to tell people about this, you know, like, share it, make sure that this story doesn't get ignored, right? So please do that. Don't think it's insignificant. It matters, you know, even if you have a small audience, it matters, right? Please, please tell more people about it. It doesn't even have to be this, our coverage of it, just the story, wherever you could find, okay? Just share the story, tell people, okay? Again, remember, if this was an American or a Canadian or a Western European person or Australian, you know, it would be get so much more coverage, and that's not fair. So please make sure you, you know, reduce the gap between the value of people's lives based on where they're from. So please make sure you do that. Music guy is saying, thank you for doing this stream and putting more perspective to this tragedy. Marsh is saying to Susanna, this was important. Don't be sorry, my friend. Bobo is saying, thank you. This was really hard episode. Lots of love to you all. Thank you, Bobo. Oh, you guys are sweet. Thank you. Like, Ali, you want to say? You seem to want to say
something. I don't know. If you have a couple of minutes, I want to read. Like, Sean Thassier actually wrote something about this. I think it's on Facebook. He had a post, so I just wanted to read that. If that's okay, cool.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So I'll read that at least in part. Okay. So he said, despite the condemnation of the Charsada and Sialkot mob violence in the name of blasphemy, I'm very sad to say, the country has not faced up to the existential danger that faces Pakistan, a force that can cause public violence at a whim and bring the state to its knees, should by this stage be seen as nothing short of a national emergency. Unfortunately, the government, civil society, and the media, though solemnly condemned it, have little realization that this is an existential threat. This is almost a repeat of Pakistan in the 2010s, when the nation woke up to the Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan terrorism in its face 5 years too late, losing thousands of lives and damaging the nation. So, yeah, there's, you know, he said the likes of Maulana Fazlur Rahman, who's one of the guys kind of in the TLP, despite condemning these incidents, lays the blame on the government for not punishing blasphemers sternly enough, leaving the people, quote unquote, no choice. In other words, if anyone is found innocent by the courts, such as Asia Bibi, mob violence is justified. I fear more people imbibe the Maulana's message than the token at condemnations by government figures. Wake up, Pakistan. Yeah, and this is, you know, obviously somebody who knows a little bit about this.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Ali. Anyways, listen, this here. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for being here. The audio version of this is going to be released, I hope, very soon. So feel free to share that as well. And yeah, and fuck Muhammad one more time.
Fuck Muhammad. Also, support the show on Patreon, please.
Yes. Link in the description. Thank you, everyone. All right, bye. Bye, guys. And be best.
The secular jihadists have been made possible thanks to the Illuminati and the covert support of Israel and the CIA. That's what we have been told, but we haven't received our checks yet. If you like what we do, please support us. Share the podcast with your friends, write and tweet us with topic and guest suggestions, or head over to secularjihadist.com and give a dollar or more for exclusive access to live video. Have your questions read and answered on the air and more. Till next time, may the flying spaghetti monster be with you.